Welcome back to the Fenway Rundown. This is Mass Labs Red Sox Podcast, and I'm your host, Chris Cotillo, joined, as I frequently am, by my co-beat writer, Chris Smith. A lot to unpack. It's been a while since we've done one of these, and that's just kind of the nature of the beast in the middle of the season. We're back to traveling all over the place, and but it's good to catch up on an off day, on a Thursday off day, with the Red Sox sitting at, I believe, 30-20 is the record, and it seems like, you know, for the last few weeks, ever since they were coming off that 9-game winning streak, they, in my mind, have just been kind of stuck in neutral. They've been playing fine. They've had their pretty good moments, but now they've been passed. They're no longer in first place in the American League East. So welcoming Chris Smith, 30-20 at the 50-game mark. I'm sure, you know, better than we would have anticipated at this point, but it seems like since that winning streak, we've seen some warts start to emerge, and the Red Sox have lost some winnable games here.
You know, you look at it, and I think they were, 7-10 when they had won 7 of the last 10 when the Rays had taken over first place.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the Rays, obviously, you know, they were hot. I mean, what did they win, 10 straight?
So 11 straight.
11 straight. So that has something to do with it. I mean, right. You know, you can't stop what other teams do, but there are some warts on the Red Sox. There's two things. When you look at low scoring games, it's, you know, their inability to score with, you know, runners, a runner at third and less than or fewer than 2 outs, mm-hmm. You know, and that's been an issue the whole year.
And back in 2019 as well.
Yeah. The other day they entered that game where they first and second inning, they had awesome opportunities to score runs off Charlie Morton. And they entered that game with a 559 OPS with runners in scoring position. And so, you know, you look at it, they're just not doing enough. And I think that Cora Parise is, you know, making contact and everything. And, you know, and it's important because, you know, these games, there is offense is at a premium this year. The pitching is better. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to hit. So if you reach a certain level of runs, I mean, it's not like you have to score 7 runs to win. I think it's like the Red Sox have only lost 3 times and they've scored over, you know, 4 runs or 4 or more runs. And so, yeah, if you ground into a double play or you ground into a fielder's choice and score that run, it's still important, especially this year, you know, where runs are at a premium. And the other thing is Bogarts. I mean, like, he's a guy that makes contact and, you know, JD's a guy that makes contact. And those guys, you know, in those situations, they have to come through. And yep. Bogarts has not come through. He did come through last night. He had a little ground ball to third base that Verdugo scored on. But He had struck out in 2 big situations with runners at third and fewer than 2 outs in the past couple of weeks. And I saw a stat about that. I think he was like 0-4 or 1-4 before. Or last night made him 1-4. I don't know. But he's got to do the job, the middle of the order, because, you know, there are people that aren't going to be able to do it at the bottom of the lineup. I mean, can you fault Renfro and Dalbec if they don't make contact in those situations? They only make contact so much percentage of the time anyway.
I mean, I think Renfro has actually been one of the better guys in those situations. The core has been praising him throughout. But yeah, that's definitely a big issue. And you know, who would have thought that offense would be the issue we were talking about for this team? There's more that we'll get to, but today there was actually some news on an off day, a little bit surprising timing, but Franchi Cordero goes down to the Woo Sox. He's the second notable position player in the last few days. Michael Chavis was option the other day. We'll get to that. But, you know, I think it comes down to this. Franchi Cordero, we saw that monster home run the other day. He's hitting 179. He started, I think, 4 of the last 11 games before the off day. So once a series player, and with Danny Santana on the roster, Christian Arroyo back, Kike Hernandez back, there just wasn't room. It seems like to me, you know, it's not going to be Jaron Duran. I think it's going to be a pitcher, maybe Colton Brewer or Brandon Brennan who comes up here. But just for a guy like Franchi, he needs at bats, and the AAA season is going on. They'll have a spot for him in the lineup every day, and I think that that's the rationale there.
Yeah, I mean, Cordero wasn't getting at bats against right-handed pitchers, you know, right. And Cora, I believe, on OMF the other day referred to him as a bench player, right? Mm-hmm. Like a guy they're using off the bench. And so, you know, he wasn't starting. The goal coming into the year was for him to be a platoon player in the outfield and to start against, you know, all right-handed starting pitchers. And mm-hmm. you know, that hadn't that hadn't been happening of late. And so I think it'll be a good opportunity. He has had a better month of May than, even though the stats might not, like the, you know, the main stats might not show it.
But yeah,
he has
had a better way down, right?
Yeah. So if he gets to Pawtucket, I mean, Worcester.
Good. He'll get it eventually.
If he gets to Worcester and, you know, he gets at bats every day, which he's going to, you know, maybe that confidence, he gets into a groove, maybe that confidence builds and, you know, you gain some momentum and you come back up and start hitting. You know, it's a great thing. That's why a lot of, you know, prospects are brought up in the middle of the year. Like, you know, Will Middlebrooks, for instance, like this guy was smashing the heck out of the ball in 2012. And, you know, he came up in the middle of the year and, you know, he just kept that momentum going. That's something we're probably going to see with Duran, you know, eventually this year. Get him as hot as possible and then get him into a major league lineup. And that's something that they're probably trying to do here with Franchi. It's like, you know, get him where he's feeling good, get him where he's actually, you know, getting hits and not striking out as much and, you know, feeling good about himself, and then, you know, get him into the major league lineup again.
And it's always, you know, I have to always give this PSA because people, you know, look at what Benintendi's doing. I know he homered on the Fenway video board last night, as you tweeted out during the rain delay. We saw an Andrew Benintendi homer for the Royals, but people are quick to think of this as a one-for-one deal. This is your weekly, maybe, you know, even more frequent than weekly reminder that it was not a one-for-one. The Red Sox are still due three prospects, as well as acquiring Josh Winkowski in that deal. So they ended up getting five players for Benintendi. The jury is very much out on the result of that deal, but, you know, the Franchi part of it has not gone well so far.
Yeah, Winkowski has done a really good job at Portland so far. You know, he has a ERA in the ones after four starts. He's definitely someone that's interesting. He had a velocity spike, you know, at Fall Instructs last year when he was with, at that point, who was he with?
Toronto.
I guess, was he with Toronto at Fall Instructs or was it? Okay. And then, you know, you look at the three players coming back and that's going to happen soon. And so, yeah, I mean, Franchi is not part of that, you know, is not the big piece in that deal. Plus, although they do like Franchi a lot, you know, and they think that he can be a good player and, you know, he's a prototypical player that, you know, the stat guys would like, you know, because he hits the ball a million feet and stuff like that. But, Benintendi, Red Sox stats made an interesting point when I tweeted out something.
As they often do.
Whoever it is, could be Cotillo.
I'm not that smart.
He made an interesting point, like, you know, you know, the Kansas City Royals manager with Matheny was, you know, talking about how, you know, well, Benintendi was hitting in May and how his average, you know, is like one of the best in the American League in May. And that's great and everything, but he hasn't really hit for much. And I tweeted out that he hasn't really hit for much power at all. You know, I mean, like we saw that home run yesterday, but that was only his third or fourth home run. And he's not hitting doubles. He's just basically a singles hitter right now. And so I think, you know, what Red Sox stats made the point was, you know, the Red Sox felt like he could get back to that level of being a good, but they didn't think that, you know, they probably were banking on the fact that he wasn't going to be a five WAR player per season again.
Right.
And, you know, and that's true. I mean, he isn't even at one, you know, I think he's like a half a WAR right now,
yeah,
you know,
point four.
So it's like, you know, I mean, yeah, he's doing well. He's hitting the ball, but it's not like he's, you know, the impact of a number seven player in the draft.
Yeah. It's 283 with a 718 OPS as we record this. Three homers, five doubles, and looks like, quick math, 38 singles. So 38 singles out of his 45 hits. So yeah, that's
a lot of singles.
That's right. So batting average aside, the other numbers, not too much, but he's still in the majors. Franchi Cordero is not. We'll move on and talk about another guy that just made his Red Sox debut on Friday, homered twice in Philly, Danny Santana. He is, much like I said about Marwin Gonzalez earlier in the year, playing a lot more than I thought he would. He seems to be in there every day, and it's kind of a nice guessing game of where he's going to play, where Kike's going to play, where Marwin's going to play, because they can kind of be shifted wherever Alex Cora wants them on any given day. Do you think Danny Santana is an impactful player who can actually kind of be a legitimate starter for this team.
Yeah, I was surprised the other day in Philadelphia when he hit that home run. It looked like an effortless home run, right? The first home run that he hit to right. I mean, he's just like, I mean, that
even
was
the Oppo one did too.
Yeah, and so like he looks like, you know, he has legit power. And you know, last time we saw him healthy and, you know, playing a full season was 2019 when he hit what 28 home runs, I think it was, for the Rangers. And before that, that was an outlier year. You know, but players figure it out. So maybe they're getting more of the 2019 version than they are the 2018, 2017, 2016 version of Danny Santana.
He had 13 homers in his first 364 games and then 28 in the next 130.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, players figure it out. I mean, yeah, we saw that with JD Martinez, David Ortiz.
Christian Vasquez power numbers are my favorite. We're going to look those up.
I mean, this guy can go on a hot streak, though, anytime, you know, Christian Vasquez. But anyway, yeah, I mean, like, you know, you look at it and, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a 20 home run hitter this year, but I think he's a better player than Marwin Gonzalez. And
I think so, too. Know,
arguably Kike Hernandez. I mean, you know, I just looking at him, you know, quickly, I mean, he's got a couple home runs, triple. Looks like an exciting player. If he can, you know, even be somewhat near that 2019 mark, then he's better than, you know, having a Marwin Gonzalez out there every day. And I'm not, that's no knock on Marwin Gonzalez. It's just that, he needs, you know, he's like, you know, it's like with Brock Hope played every day. He's a little exposed, you know, and, you know, when Dustin Pedroia went on the DL in 2016 for an extended period, Holt was playing second base every day and he wasn't as valuable. And I think that's, you could say that the same thing with Marwin, who's, you know, gets a little exposed when he plays every day.
Yeah. And he has been, I mean, those guys are in the lineup every day. We've seen Marwin kind of get unplugged here for a couple of days or hasn't seemed to be, it seems like Danny Santana is going to take some bats away from him. Let's talk about the bullpen a little bit. Cause I feel like it has been generally more steady than it was earlier on. You know, Matt Barnes is the big story. Matt Barnes has obviously been a superstar. He'll probably make the all-star team. Adam Ottavino's been up and down, but seems like lately he's kind of hitting a groove there as well. Darwinson had a couple big outs in Philly. Josh Taylor has been excellent in May. So where do you see this bullpen right now? Do you feel like they're finally kind of coming into their own, kind of getting the structure after some bumps in the road?
Yeah, early May was a, you know, early first couple of weeks of May was a really difficult stretch for them. Obviously, they had a pretty good April. You know, Barnes has just amazed me like crazy this year. You know, he's just a totally different type of pitcher. And I always thought Barnes had, you know, elite stuff. He just didn't throw strikes and, you know, he didn't have as enough confidence in his stuff as he does right now. And so, but you know, you have to look at the fact that he's always been a better first half pitcher too. So, you know, there could be some regression obviously in the second half. Ottavino's look better. You know, the big thing with him is, you know, first hitter and throwing strikes, you know, think like almost half the time that the first batter's reached against him. Josh Taylor's looked a lot better. You know,
the key there is using him in short stints, it seems.
I mean, like, the guy's got good stuff. He, you know, I mean, he showed it in 2019. And so, you know, he looks, like, good right now. I'd like to see the strikeout numbers up a little bit, but, you know, he's not getting as many strikeouts. But still, I mean, he's looked good. Darnson, I mean, that emotion that he showed on the mound in Philadelphia, that was big. You know, that was cool, you know. You know, it shows that he's really into it. And, you know, he seems like he's throwing more strikes right now than he was, even though he hit that batter. But, but then, you know, you look at it and it's always fairly easy to pick up a bullpen piece at the deadline without giving up too much. And, you know, you're not going to have to give up a top prospect. And, you know, and you also look at it and there are some guys in Worcester that, you know, could come up. You know, Brandon Workman being one of them, one run in five innings. I know his walks have been up a little bit, four walks, I think, in five innings. But he's one. Caleb Wart. Is that how you pronounce the last name?
Wart. It's O-R-T. It's not very hard to pronounce.
Yeah, I said Ort.
Ort, all right. Well, you asked me how to pronounce it. I mean, it's the simplest
Never heard it pronounced before, but yeah. You know, they have some people down at Worcester that, you know, are able to come up too. So it should be interesting. It should be interesting to see who this move is for Franchi, because it probably will be a reliever. Chris Hatfield just made a good point on, I think he attributed you to getting the move of
Ryan Brazier.
Right. Yeah. And but yeah, I mean, you know, he's going to have to come off the 60-day IL, and so they're going to have to open up a 40-man roster spot at that point. So it's likely going to be somebody off the 40-man roster. It's not going to be, you know, you said Duran or Munez or somebody like that.
Yeah, I think it's probably Colton Brewer. That could happen the next, probably before this even goes up. But Colton Brewer looks like he'll be the move for Franchi. In terms of the bullpen, you mentioned Workman, you mentioned Ort, a couple other guys. Gonsalves is a guy that could come up and be a lefty reliever. I know they like him. With Bizzardo down, he would be your first choice. Always Chris Smith's first choice, Eduardo Bizzardo. Kevin McCarthy still down there. And you know, Austin Bryce, Marcus Walden. Now, there's some guys that have really helped the Red Sox in the past. Not Austin Bryce, he didn't. But Marcus Walden, you know, was a good major league pitcher in 19. Brandon Workman was probably the best reliever in the majors in 19. So they do have some options there. A couple more topics to get to. Quick previewing, you know, what's next for us. On Sunday, I'll be heading down to Houston. You'll be going to New York the week after. Two pretty big series for the Red Sox. Alex Cora's first time back in Houston since everything went down. I think it's going to be a full house down there. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what the reaction is, just because it seems like, you know, from what I've heard, Astros fans seem to think Alex Cora was kind of the ringleader and it was his fault and their players were innocent and all that type of stuff. So I can see him getting a pretty icy reaction down at Minute Maid.
Well, that's what their players probably led their fans to believe.
That's right.
And, you know, yeah. So yeah, go on.
Well, you know, yeah, I was going to say, and potentially league investigators.
Has Cora really got anything on the road this year? I mean, I know that
in Texas,
they maybe booed a little bit. I didn't really hear too much. I know Pete, you know, was there next to me and he pointed it out. You know, he really hasn't got much. And maybe that's because most of the parks haven't been full. I mean, you know, all the parks haven't been full. Texas was the only park that was full. But yeah, it should be interesting to see what kind of a reaction he gets. You know, I think looking at this situation more, and I know we don't want to get into the whole Astros cheating scandal here, but I think Cora got a little bit of a raw deal where, you know, they were giving players immunity and, you know, and they weren't giving, you know, coaches immunity and, you know, the players, you know, probably threw him under the bus a little bit.
Why wouldn't you blame a guy that if he's suspended, it hurts one of your rivals, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know if that's what happened, but it just seems easy.
Yeah. And, you know, and Coors handled the situation. I mean, like, it's funny, like, you know, you think that he wouldn't want to talk about it and stuff. And he's brought it up like multiple times on his own this year, right? You know, like even when he was talking about his daughter graduating from high school the other day, he's like, you know, I had to answer questions to her about the Astros situation. And, you know, when he was talking about his brother, Joey, I mean, no one even asked him about that situation, the cheating scandal. Mm-hmm. Just like, he's like, you know, I felt bad for Joey. He brought that up. You know, he's like, I felt bad for Joey because, you know, people would associate him or stuff, or I didn't want people to associate him with this whole thing too. And so, Cora's like really been, transparent about this whole situation. And I think he's done a really good job, and that makes fewer questions asked about it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's books that are going to come out and that'll be the next thing. And we'll see how that goes, but it'll be interesting to see what Houston is like. And even more important than that, it's an important stretch for the Red Sox going to Houston and going to New York. We'll close with this. They're 1-15 at Yankee Stadium in the last 2 years. So that's 1-15 since they clinched the ALDS there. Pretty good stretch for them in September and October 2018 at Yankee Stadium. They clinched the division on a weeknight right before we had a 5 a.m. flight to Cleveland. Never forget that. And then they, in October, obviously, they won the ALDS there. And ever since, it's been horrible. 1-15. You know, everybody knows that the Yankees are good. Everybody knows that's a tough place to play, especially if it's going to be back to, you know, full capacity or near it. That's a kind of, for the first time they're playing them, it's kind of a litmus test, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a litmus test for certain players. You know, like, you know, Barnes has always struggled at Yankee Stadium, and he's having his most dominant season. He's also struggled at Houston. And so, you know, it should be interesting to see how these guys perform. Yeah, I think that they just need to get good starting pitching. You know, right now we're looking at, you know, the potential. The Red Sox say Chris Sale is going to come back at some point this year. They're basically a rotation of number twos and threes and fours, and they've been fine. But, you know, in a tight ball game, are they going to be fine at Yankee Stadium? You know, let's look at that bullpen that we say is kind of taking some shape right now and see how, you know, Ottavino and different guys pitch in high leverage situations that are really high leverage against the Yankees with the division online and, you know, a bunch of fans, you know, in that stadium, because it is a difficult place to play. We've seen that before. And, you know, you just have to look at like Matt Barnes numbers, you know, just, it's just not an easy place to pitch.
Well, Chris Smith will be in New York. I'll be in Houston. Lots of big games ahead for the Red Sox. That's the Fenway Rundown. And we appreciate you tuning in.